National Parks Week is almost here as we celebrate America's best idea. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, the theme for this year's National Parks Week, which begins Saturday, is We're on a Mission. We'll tell you how you can support the mission of preserving America's national parks right here in our area. Get on the line and join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, Keeping History Above Water in St. Augustine. We'll look ahead to a national event taking place in the nation's oldest city. Plus, what an incredible sports story over the weekend as Tiger Woods added another green blazer to his collection at the Masters yesterday. Culpepper will have a look back at that. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, call it a mission to protect what has been called famously America's best idea, our national park system. This month, the National Park Service is highlighting the importance and value of our national parks to make sure we can preserve them for future generations. There have been threats to the national parks in recent years, everything from a warming planet to moves around the country to develop on some park lands. Mark Woods, columnist for the Florida Times Union, is the author of Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. He joins us now, along with Ted Johnson and Corinne Fenner, both with the Timaquan Ecological and Historic Preserve, as we talk about our national parks. Hey, guys, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And on this beautiful Monday morning, here's a question to everybody out there. Have you ever been to the national park here in Jacksonville? Do you even know there's a national park? Actually, more than one national park here in our area. What's your favorite national park? And why do you think the national parks are important to this country? Give us a call as we talk about National Parks Week. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. And in a moment, we'll talk a little bit with Mark about his book and the year he spent in the national parks around the country. But first, let's begin with you, Ted Johnson, your community engagement specialist with the Timaquan Ecological and Historic Preserve. National Parks Week is kicking off on April 20th, and this year's theme is We're on a Mission. Why is this mission important to you?
Well, it's important to me because part of our mission is to connect with the greater community. And with my position, I want to make sure that we can reach audiences that are more diverse. And what we're offering as far as our programming is a great opportunity to make those connections. So we hope that folks in the community will find interest in seeking out the resources of their national park sites, and including the one right here that we're discussing, Timaquan Ecological and Historic Preserve, and find a way to make relevant connections with the resources and the history that is theirs.
Corinne, for people that have never been out to the Timaquan Preserve, they're really missing out, I have to say. We recently went walking with you guys, along with Mark, and posted a video on our website. It's certainly one of the most beautiful natural spaces anywhere, but especially here in North Florida. It is an absolute treasure. For people that have never been, tell us a little bit about what people can expect if they take a visit to our national park.
Okay, thank you so much for having us and giving us this opportunity to talk about the natural and the cultural resources that are preserved and protected at Timaquan. Visitors can learn about cultural history at the preserve, including Fort Caroline, that tells the story of French who were seeking religious freedom and territorial expansion. There's also Kingsley Plantation, where visitors can explore the grounds and learn stories of survival on a plantation dating back to 1798. There's also American Beach, and that gave African Americans a place to recreate and enjoy the ocean during a time of racial segregation. Visitors can also learn about the military importance of the St. Johns River over time. And those are the cultural and the historical things to learn about and experience. There are also many opportunities to learn about the natural world. Wetlands and waterways make up about 75% of the preserve. and provides habitat for wildlife. So there's opportunities for birding, kayaking, fishing, hiking. The Theodore Roosevelt area has a number of trails where visitors can experience the forest and kind of escape the city and enjoy the silence of the forest or bird singing. It's a great place to spend time with friends, to make family memories, and just a great place to find recreation and recreation of the mind.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about National Parks Week. Mark Woods, you're a columnist with the Florida Times Union, and of course, you're the author of a book about this. It's called Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. For people that haven't read this book, I really encourage them to pick up a copy because you actually spent a full year of your life visiting national parks, which is pretty incredible.
Tough gig, right?
I know. We were all so jealous of you. Why did you think it was important to do that?
Well, you know, as I wrote about in the book, that year changed because it was the year I lost my mom. And so I almost think about why it was important before I started. It was more broad, kind of thinking back to childhood and these places that are, you know, they're an amazing piece of America that when I'd meet foreign visitors in national parks, they'd say, we have cathedrals that could rival your cathedrals. Our cathedrals could beat your cathedrals, you know, and our urban parks could trump anything you have. But they'd say, we don't have national parks like you have. And do Americans realize what they have? And I'd say, I think some do. But going back to what Ted was talking about, the relevancy and the future generations and the diversity, we need to make sure that the next generation, our kids and their children, appreciate these places and make sure to protect them the way our parents did.
Let's talk about that for a minute now. As we just heard, one of the incredible jewels of the Timucuan area is the Theodore Roosevelt area. That's 600 acres of forest right in the middle of the city and some coastal wetlands, too. It was dedicated and given to the National Park Service by the late Willie Brown. His family had owned those acres. He lived on the property in a shack without electricity or running water his entire life and gave that area to the NPS with the premise, with the provision, rather, that it never be developed, that it stay exactly as it is. And that's the whole idea behind national parks, is that they are wild places, undeveloped places, places where we can observe the land as it's existed for thousands of years in a pristine state. And so as we talk about National Parks Week, Mark, I'd like to get your thoughts about controversies around the country in recent years as these national park spaces have fended off potential development, people wanting to annex these lands and build on them. How do you feel about that?
Right. Yeah. I don't remember a more tumultuous or controversial time than the last few years. I mean, it's been attacks on public lands in ways that I haven't seen before. So there's a lot of things to be discouraged about, and yet there's things to be also very encouraged about. There was a public lands bill that passed through Congress recently that was the largest public lands bill in a decade. So here it is, a time that it seems like we can't agree upon anything, and somehow Democrats and Republicans came together and overwhelmingly approved this bill that is wonderful for our public lands, for funding of them, for preserving. The stats are pretty impressive. How many, I had them in front of me, let's see. Withdraws more than 370,000 acres of land from mining in around two national parks, including Yellowstone, preserves 1.3 million acres of wilderness. So this is a pretty dramatic bill. Mm-hmm. And like I said, bipartisan. So there's, you know, our national parks are one thing that poll well on across mm-hmm. the aisle. You know, I think there was a poll the National Parks Conservation Association did a few years ago and said, I forget how it's phrased, but asked, do you support our national parks? And it was 95%. Is there mm-hmm. is there anything else that we can agree on? 95% of Americans can agree upon.
Yeah, Ted Johnson, this is something that, as Mark said, you don't get a lot of pushback about. These are free and beautiful places that are open to everyone. And at our own national park, the Timucuan Preserve, you're going to be offering some fun stuff we need to point out. Just a few things. Let's mention those before we go to the calls.
Well, on the two Sundays that are included in National Park Week, there'll be some night hikes. Those are going to be really interesting. One of them is entitled "The Night Is Dark and Full of History."
And it sounds kind of spooky,
well,
but cool too.
Right. It's to raise the curiosity. So
people can come out and hike with you guys at night.
That's right.
With flashlights, I guess, or
yeah, we'll have
something like that.
Right.
I did one of these a couple years ago. Yeah, and with red flashlights, mm-hmm. so your eyes can still see the darkness. Yeah, it was really fun.
Do you catch any wildlife in the dark?
So the other hike will give those that are attending the opportunity to take in, as they exist, the sounds, what can be seen perhaps even at night, and just the sereneness that can be enjoyed on the in the Theodore Roosevelt area. So enjoying nature without so much illumination, as it were.
Corinne, I said this before when we went out and met with you guys recently, and you can check out the video on our website of us walking through the Theodore Roosevelt area. You guys have pretty amazing jobs. You get to spend a lot of time in a beautiful place. Is it? I'm sure there's some work involved, but still pretty fun, I would think, to get to be in that wild, beautiful place all the time.
It is. It's a very fun job, and it's a very meaningful job. I really believe in the mission of the National Park Service to preserve and to protect these special places. And one thing I really enjoy about being a park ranger is using creativity and brainstorming and coming up with fun ways to really provide a variety of experiences for all different types of people to enjoy their national parks.
And what's your favorite national park, First Coast? Is it Artimaquan Preserve?
Yes, it
maybe,
is.
Maybe it's yours, I know. Maybe Yellowstone, Yosemite, Acadia National Park in Maine. There are so many beautiful places to enjoy. The Great Smoky Mountains National Park, we've taken our kids there. Give us a call as we talk about National Parks Week. It kicks off on April 20th, 549-2937. Todd is on the south side. Hey, Todd, good morning.
Oh, good morning. This is Dr. Todd Sack. Getting out and taking a walk is a lot of fun, and it's also great for the health. And we have a local organization which gives free walks in the parks almost every weekend, the Timaquan Parks Foundation. So look at timaquanparks.org and get out in the woods. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's a great suggestion. Thanks for that. There is a foundation that supports this park, and people can join this group, Mark. If they're you know, a little unsure, they've never been out there, that's a good way to start.
Right. Dr. Sack is talking about, the Timaquan Park Foundation is, lots of parks have a friends group that does things that basically brings people in, and it's activities like that, but it's also a way to try and, you mentioned Acadia. Acadia has a massive friends group that with a lot of donors and takes care of a lot of the carriage roads and things there that, you know, budgets have been an issue for the Park Service in recent years. And so the friends groups sometimes can help get things done that maybe the Park Service is struggling to get done.
Sam at the beaches. Hey, Sam. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I have a senior citizen's pass, and any senior citizen can apply for that. And you can get into these national parks, the majority of them free of charge. I went to Yellowstone National Park in February, and it was great. And I've spent an entire day. The park is so huge that I only scratched the surface. So I would encourage senior citizens to take advantage of that.
That's a good tip, too. Thanks, Sam. Ted, that is something people need to be aware of. I mean, most of these parks are close to free, or some are free, but for the really famous parks, I'm sure you do have to pay to get in.
That's true, and many of them do have fees, but sometimes those can be adjusted. And in the past few years, there have been reevaluations for many of the park sites as to whether or not to maintain those fees.
And that brings up a larger question, that if fees will be raised to enter some of these parks, it's because it's becoming expensive to maintain these parks, and Congress doesn't always allocate the budgetary needs that you need to maintain the parks. Isn't that part of the issue?
Yes, it is. You know, there are reasons to also reassess those fees, and there can be other ways that the parks can, as Mark mentioned, can handle some challenges that they may have financially.
Mark, I don't think you and I qualify yet for the senior citizen pass for Yellowstone, but soon enough.
It was one of the great bargains. Forever and ever, it was $10 for a senior pass for a lifetime, and I think it went, went up to, I think, $80 or $85 now. But yeah, admission fees has been one of the controversies in recent years, and it you know, these guys have, I don't know what their opinions are. They have to be apolitical, so I'm... And that's, I love that about the Park Service. So I can talk about a little bit. That was one of the controversies. Do we raise admissions fees at places like Yellowstone, the Grand Canyon, some of the iconic ones? And my first thought was, well, these places, you know, yeah, it's cheap compared to going to Disney. And yeah, mm-hmm. maybe we should. But I don't want, the more I thought about it, I don't want to exclude anybody from going to these places. And that's not the way, in my opinion, to fund the National Park Service. I want anybody who wants to go to the Grand Canyon to be able to go there. And maybe if it went up to $75 or something, that wouldn't change me going there. But there are people, it would turn them away at the gate. They would go elsewhere. So I don't want to see those increase dramatically.
549-2937, as we talk about National Parks Week on the show this morning. Do you have a favorite national park? Give us a call. Ben is in Fruit Cove. Hi, Ben. Good morning.
Yes. My question has to do with prescribed fire being so important to the maintenance of the ecological condition of our parks, especially here in the Southeast. How difficult is it for the Park Service to get the permits and do these things and the liability concerns? Because, you know, you mentioned maintenance, and if we don't maintain the environmental values, we're kind of spinning our wheels in a certain way.
Thanks for that question. Corrine.
Okay, thank you for asking about prescribed fire. That is one of the management techniques, and we do have a team of trained firefighters at Timaquan Ecological and Historic Preserve, and we work closely with other parks in the area, like Cumberland Island National Seashore, and even with Okefenokee National Wildlife Refuge, to make sure that we are managing the pine forests and using prescribed fire in a responsible way that helps to further the mission and the ecological health of the area.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about sort of a political demilitarized zone in America, our national parks. They celebrated 100 years in 2016. In that year, the U.S. Department of the Interior launched the Find Your Park campaign so that you could find one near you. Now, this is interesting, guys. The most visited national park, this surprised me, Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which borders North Carolina and Tennessee. I would have thought it would have been the Grand Canyon or Yellowstone or Yosemite. It's the Great Smoky Mountain Park, which is within driving distance of us here in Jacksonville, Florida. And I have been there myself. It is an incredible place to visit. Now, let me ask you, as we touched on a minute ago, Mark, beginning in April of 2017, the Trump administration departed from longstanding presidential tradition of protecting these public lands and moved to remove designations from existing national monuments greater than 100,000 acres. Congress has been relying on the Antiquities Act to protect lands under the National Park Service because these large land protection bills that have been put forward haven't made it through the legislative process. There have also been moves to develop, I think, some property at the Bears Ears National Monument out west, the Sequoia, the Pacific Remote Islands, the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, and others. There, nothing like that in our area, but around the country, these efforts to really encroach on these lands have kind of gotten some traction in recent years. So for people that would be open to that idea, what's your response? Why do you think that's a bad idea?
I think it's a horrible precedent to be shrinking these places that we preserved. The shrinking of Bears Ears and Grand Escalante, it was pretty unprecedented. It is not the first time in history that we have shrunk national monuments. National monuments are created with presidential stroke of a pen. And pretty much every president has done that to create national monuments, but we haven't shrunk them in the way that we did in the last few years. There's been troubling things like that, and there's been controversies about the Secretary of Interior, and so there's been a lot of things.
Let's talk about that for a minute. In particular, what?
Well, the Ryan Zinke resigned after there were ethical issues, and now the confirmation of the recent Secretary of Interior, David Bernhardt, was an oil and gas lobbyist. So, the person overseeing our national parks it is seen as someone that will be doing the bidding as opening up some of these lands to that kind of activity. So that's the reason I get worried and discouraged. But then, as I said, the public lands bill, when we step back and look at these places, public opinion does matter. If we say these places are important to us, politicians will listen. So I think that it's a time when it's really important for the public to say we love our national parks. We love what they do. We want to have these. We want to have these places protected. They're important to us. So for both the natural and cultural protection of these places. So there is a battle going on now. There's a lot of consensus, but there's also some battles going on now.
As park rangers, you're sort of caught in the middle of that, Ted Johnson. You just have to, I guess, stay above the fray and keep doing your job. But, politics have interfered with the national parks. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think, as Mark has said, what we want to try to continue to support is the idea that there is a majority that do appreciate the parks and that do want to work to preserve them. I think our efforts to encourage folks to come out and visit and experience those parks, realize how valuable they really are and how significant they can be in their lives, will hopefully help them to realize that there's a need for stewardship and preservation. That's what we can hope for.
They have scientifically shown that if you take what is now called a forest bath, what my parents just called going outside to play, but it's now called a forest bath, that improves your health. That literally improves your heart, your blood pressure. It is just so good for you to just go out and walk in nature. And so what would you say to those they just get too busy? They don't make time for that. Why should they?
Well, do you want to comment on that?
Sure, yeah. I would say that maybe put it in your planner to take a trip out to Timaquan. The park, it's right here in our backyard. It's right here in Jacksonville. It's very easy to get to. There are the different areas with Fort Caroline, Kingsley Plantation, Theodore Roosevelt. And really, when you do think about the benefits that you were mentioning, Melissa, the mental benefits and the health benefits, there are lots of opportunities. Also, Timaquan Parks Foundation, they are doing healthy hikes out at different parks, at some of the City of Jacksonville parks, at some of the Florida State parks. So there are many opportunities. So put it on your to-do list to get out to one of your local parks and experience some of the mental and physical health benefits.
Now, in your book, Mark, Lassoing the Sun, you visited a number of parks. Do you have a favorite? What's your favorite place?
I always say I can't pick one.
No, you got to pick one.
I go for two, basically.
Okay, all right.
Redwood, because it's I think, one of the first ones I went to, one of the strong memories of childhood, and then I went back shortly before I worked on the book, and as it turned out, it was one of the last trips with my mom, and I took my daughter there at about the same age I went. So when I ask people what is their favorite, I realize it's often partly the beauty of the place, but it's also partly that personal connection of what time in your life you went, who you went with. So Redwood is like that for me. Grand Canyon, I've gone back to again and again and again and experienced in a variety of ways, from rafting to hiking to running, backpacking, and I'm perpetually kind of trying to plan and dream of something there. So I think that is a telling sign that I'm keep trying to get back. So I think those two are probably, I would have to say, my favorites. Although I love my local national park. I love Cumberland Island. I love the variety in the parks. They do represent all the geography and the history of our nation.
Now, you've been covering this as well as us here at WJCT, the controversy just over the border in Georgia about potentially opening up part of Cumberland Island to development. What about that? That's a controversy that's in our backyard.
Right. Yeah, I think it's 90-acre swath of land. I think the troubling part is it's right in the heart of Cumberland Island. And Cumberland Island is this amazing place I thought about making it one of the chapters of the book because it's interesting that in theory, in another 100 years, will be, if climate change hasn't covered it in water, it will be more pristine than it is today. Because that the landowners, one by one, piece by piece, the park is acquiring more and more. So this would reverse that trend and maybe add development to a place that has been becoming more pristine. So that's why it's an amazing amount of passion it generates, which tells you how much people who have been to Cumberland Island love Cumberland Island, because it does lead to, you put that out there and it creates, it's a national story in some ways.
Yeah, it is a national story. Okay, Ted Johnson, our engagement specialist. Let's say once again how people can engage with National Parks Week. This begins with night hikes this Friday, correct? Tell us about the night hikes and what else people can do during National Parks Week.
There'll be also on Sundays, Matchlock Mania. So, of course, we mentioned that Fort Caroline does commemorate the early French settlement that was here in this area under Jean Ribault. So we have rangers that will be on site demonstrating how the matchlocks that would have been utilized by that military force would be fired. So, I mean, those are really exciting demonstrations, and they're very popular. They've been ongoing. And they will be on both Sundays that are included in National Park Week at 2 p.m. And then we also have Microscope Monday, and that will be the Monday that's included at 11 a.m. So some of the microscopic life that exists in the ecosystem here.
So you literally take people out with a microscope to look at tiny living creatures? Is that what happens?
Well, they come into the visitor center there that's at the Fort Caroline, which is also the whole preserves visitor center, and they get an opportunity to take a look on the slides that we have.
Okay. And again, night hike starts this Friday. So if people want to participate in that, what do they need to do?
Visitors can call 904-641-7155 to sign up for the night hikes. And again, the night hikes are Friday, April 19th. And Friday, April 27th, and both of them are at 7 o'clock p.m. So like Mark said, bring your flashlight, wear good walking shoes, and bring insect repellent and water. And we hope to see you all there.
That's right. Get out and enjoy it. Because this is free, by the way. The Timaquin Preserve is always free and open to the public every day. So Corrine Fenner, Ted Johnson, both with the Timaquan Ecological and Historic Preserve, and Mark Woods of the Florida Times Union and author of Lassoing the Sun, which, by the way, pick up a copy of that and support local authors and local bookstores, too. Thanks to all three of you so much for joining us this morning, and we'll see you out at the parks.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Melissa.
Much more still ahead on the show later in the hour. What a comeback. As Culpepper tells us about Tiger Woods' incredible Sunday at the Masters. But up next, it's Keeping History Above Water in St. Augustine. A national conference comes to the nation's oldest city as we learn about how to preserve our most precious historic sites. That's after this break. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back. Keep listening. We'll be right back.
join WJCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting wjct.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, a national conference on the future impact of sea level rise is coming here to the First Coast. The third major Keeping History Above Water conference will take place in St. Augustine from May 5th through the 8th at Flagler College. Now, this event will feature significant national, even international speakers. So it's a chance for all of us to learn about how climate change and rising waters will affect Florida, including the nation's oldest city, where, of course, severe flooding after Hurricanes Matthew and Irma really impacted that historic bayfront and other precious old sites. I spoke about the Keeping History Above Water Conference with organizer Dr. Leslie Keyes. She directs historic preservation at Flagler College. Take a listen. Dr. Leslie Keyes, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for including me.
This conference has a provocative title, Keeping History Above Water. Let's talk about that, particularly in St. Augustine, the oldest city in the United States, where it's particularly important to preserve these amazing historic sites. Was that part of why St. Augustine was chosen for this national conference?
Yes, and St. Augustine actually competed against a couple of other cities north of us. But I think that the reason that the selection committee chose St. Augustine is first, that we are a Spanish settled city, that we've just come off the 450th anniversary of St. Augustine's founding, which included having the King and Queen of Spain visit, so that gained national attention. And unfortunately, because we've come off of a couple of hurricanes, Matthew and Irma, and then Michael, of course, came through after we were selected and hit the rest of Florida. So we're very vulnerable here in St. Augustine, and our economy is based on about 6.5 million visitors coming to our community each year. So we're a tiny little place with 15,000 people and a large image.
Right. Now, this conference is especially packed with subject matter experts from across the United States, Puerto Rico, Canada, Australia, Japan, Scotland. You've got people coming from all over the world. You have federal agencies all over the place coming to present, even members of the Seminole tribe. This is a really important event for people to get a better grip on what's happening in terms of what we can expect here in Florida related to sea level rise and the impacts from flooding and extreme weather. Can you tell us a little bit about what we'll learn at Keeping History Above Water?
Well, we are focused on, first of all, historical, archaeological, and natural resources as they relate to historical resources. We are certainly looking at underrepresented populations and very vulnerable populations, which is the reason that we have almost a dozen members and representatives from the Seminole Tribe of Florida coming. We also have three people coming from the Pointe Lanchin Tribe, which is in Louisiana on the coast and probably is going to be in a situation where if it's not careful, they're going to have to retreat as an option. We do have federal agency heads. We have the National Park Service sending about a half a dozen staff. FEMA will have their outreach coordinator. We have three members of the Army Corps of Engineers because they're doing a Southeast Atlantic Coast study. So those are sort of the public people coming in. Privately, we have academics, floodplain managers, architects, planners, authors. Jeff Goodell, who was here on the Bayfront for Hurricane Matthew after having written the Rolling Stone article on Goodbye Miami, has just finished spending 2 months in Antarctica. He will be our plenary speaker on May 5th in the evening program, which is between 5 and 7 in the Lewis Auditorium here on the campus. His book, The Water Will Come, is a bestseller, and he will be doing a book signing. Locally, our graduate, Mallory Hopkins, will have her 14-minute award-winning documentary film shown right about 5 o'clock. Doug Parsons with America Adapts, who grew up in Sarasota, but he does a nationwide podcast. He is coming in from Tucson, Arizona. He's at the National Adaptation Forum before he comes to our conference, so he will have all sorts of ideas there on how to try to make our historic resources throughout the world more resilient.
Let me just say that the whole point of this is for people to learn the importance of resiliency and adaptation to what you just pointed out, the title of the best-selling book that author will be talking about, The Water Will Come. And in Florida, there's not enough acknowledgement and preparation for that. This is a way for people to get religion on this, get ready for this, isn't it?
I hope so. Florida is unusual in that some of us have lived here a long time, but an enormous number of us have not. And Florida's population has grown exponentially in the last decade. And frequently it is from a population change that includes seniors, frail elderly adults, but in particular, those people that have never had to address preparing for storms, routine sunny day flooding, or worst-case scenario, hurricanes. So we are trying to help people who've been here a long time and see this as perhaps a natural phenomenon, and those that have moved here and don't really understand yet what is happening, to understand that we have a short time frame to deal with this, but that our history and our coastal cities and our interior cities in Florida are just as valuable and have just as significant historic resources as the rest of the nation. And by bringing all of these people together, and we have about 60 speakers, we are hoping that that will provide a good framework for us to get together, do some work here, especially in Northeast Florida, try to work regionally, as I know you are at WJCT now, and as Tampa and St. Pete and Orlando and South Florida are, to be better prepared for those storms, but to become more resilient in our everyday lives on how we live, how we commute, where we go and when, and how we evacuate when we need to.
Dr. Leslie Keyes of Flagler College, thank you so much for joining us. It's so important that people register and attend Keeping History Above Water the first week, and in St. Augustine, go to historyabovewater.org. This is coming up in early May, historyabovewater.org. Dr. Keyes, thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Melissa.
And in a moment, Tiger Woods makes one of the greatest comebacks in sports. That's next.
WJCT and the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp are honoring teachers that attended the 2019 Teach Conference and all teachers dedicated to educating our youth. Join us and Clifford the Big Red Dog on Sunday, April 28th at 3:05 p.m. Info at wjct.org/events.
Sports Wrap Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Tiger Woods made an amazing comeback Sunday at Augusta National.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
It's one of the greatest stories in recent memory in sports. Cole Pepper is here to probably not quite shed a tear, but a lot of guys seem to be really choking up over the weekend on this thing.
Yeah,
good morning.
Maybe it was just the anticipation for the Game of Thrones season opener. I don't know. They got everybody emotional, but sure, Tiger coming back and winning at the Masters, something that not too long ago a lot of folks thought would not happen, but certainly there were a lot of eyes on Tiger yesterday at Augusta National. And, you know, if you think about it, it really was a remarkable comeback because, you know, Tiger winning a major for the first time when he didn't own at least a share of the lead after three rounds would have been a big story anyway. Every other major he had won in his Hall of Fame to be career came when he had a lead or a share of the lead entering the final round. But think about what Tiger's been through over the past several years. In 2015, his chipping was so bad that the dreaded Y word was being thrown around. Tiger had the yips, something that no golfer likes to experience. Less than 22 months ago, he was arrested near Jupiter while asleep at the wheel because of his pain medication he was taking for his back surgery. And when he came to TPC Sawgrass last year, that's just 11 months ago, remember, in May, he told us he had finally gotten his playing feels back, but that he needed to fine-tune. Well, he certainly did. He finished tied for 11th in that tournament. And to do that against a field of that quality certainly should have told us something. But that was just one step in his process. And then yesterday took a huge step. He needs just one more match win to match Sam Snead for the most wins in PGA Tour history. And he seems like a surefire bet to do that. The big question is, how many more majors does Tiger have in him? Can he win three more to match Jack Nicklaus? I'm certainly not going to doubt him at this point. I think it's going to be very intriguing. Sort of the seminal turnaround for him was when he won the Tour Championship at the end of last year. Not a major, but a big-time event. And then I think everybody has had to realize, hey, Tiger's back and he's going to be a factor. Now the question at 43, post-back surgery, how long can he play at this level?
But still, what a great moment, especially when we saw the images of him hugging his kids. And just one of those stories that I think touched a lot of people. Really exciting to see that up in Georgia. And a quick break and some more sports news with Cole right after this. Keep listening.
The FHS Annual Meeting and Symposium is May 16th through 18th in Cape Canaveral. The conference theme is Countdown to History, Ice Age to the Space Age. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will preview the event. We'll discuss the Fort Dade Papers from the Second Seminole War and much more. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
A small Arizona border town has become a magnet for ad hoc militias.
When we do ops, I'll bring my guys in because a lot of places Border Patrol won't go to.
Those groups are testing the local live and let live spirit.
We've had confrontations with them about bringing their guns in here or harassing the people that work here.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
In the ashes of the wildfires, recovery is slow.
The people who have lost their loved ones, you know, they blame the fire and the position that they're in.
California's campfires burned more than 5 months ago, but communities say they are still facing loss. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
This afternoon at 2 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It's been said that it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. Some parts of the country are well known for their unique niceties, especially the Midwest and the South. But that sweetness is easily misread if you're not in the know. How do we say what we mean without being mean with what we say? Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Talking a little more sports with Cole Pepper this Monday. And they are running the Boston Marathon as we speak, Cole. Really rainy up there as the runners hit the pavement, including a few dozen from Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, more than 80 runners from the Jacksonville area are running, including Kate Landau, a nurse who moved here recently, who is running in the elite level right now. And just looking at her times, she's gone through the first 5K, averaging 5 minutes 40 seconds a mile. So she is really moving right now as she has started. They had to shelter in place at one point this morning as they were trying to get everybody loaded up into the start areas. Some runners had to stay in buses. Others went into a building near the start line. And the inclement weather, rain and heavy rain and strong winds both really sort of wreaked havoc, but they have gotten things underway, and so they're off and running. Among those who will be running and probably finishing among the top times for folks in Jacksonville, Chris McCaffrey, who won the First Coast Cup at the Agate River Run. He is one of the top-seeded runners from Jacksonville, as well as a former Keys 100 runner, Mark Burgett, who's used to running much longer races, but instead is deciding, hey, just 26.2 will be a nice jog around the park for him.
Seeing a lot of hashtags for Boston Strong this morning on social media as people recall the terrorist attack at the Boston Marathon several years ago. And so people can follow that as well on social media as they follow the race. Now, how about this? In 122 years, according to WBUR and the Boston Athletic Association, the Boston Marathon has never been canceled due to weather.
How about that?
Those New Englanders are tough.
Yeah, and this time of year, you can get any manner of weather in Boston for sure.
Yeah, really hot, really rainy, really windy. So they are running it now. Follow along as our Florida runners do very well, hopefully, in the race. Okay, the NFL draft is just 10 days away, and you've been following the Jaguars' potential picks pretty closely.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come down to either an offensive tackle or a defensive lineman. I've been saying that for the last couple of weeks, and it's looking more and more like that is going to be the case. If it is an offensive lineman, look for Juwan Taylor, the Florida right tackle, to be the Jaguars' top prospect there. But even though the Jaguars' offense needs a lot more help than the defense does, getting a pass rusher is never a bad plan. Remember when Tom Coughlin won his first Super Bowl, he had four pass rushers on that defensive line for the Giants. So that could be a big thing. But also today, by the way, Jaguars' players have already begun checking in for the offseason conditioning program. Tomorrow, we expect to hear from Doug Marrone, Nick Foles, Calais Campbell. Then Thursday, we'll have the Jaguars' State of the Franchise address to kind of get a feeling for how things are business-wise for the Jags.
And what do you expect to come out of that?
I expect him to say we need to increase local revenues, which is sort of the drumbeat that we've heard every year for the last 8 years when we've had this sort of thing. And it will be interesting to see how business changed after 2017 and the run into the playoffs and then last year's disappointing season and how much things varied there. My expectation is, as probably a lot of people would be, that business wasn't quite as good in 2018 compared to 2017.
They've just got to do better. Okay, the Gators held their orange and blue game Saturday.
Yeah, and I've been a little puzzled, to be honest with you, from the Gator Nation. For some reason, there are a lot of, at least loud voices, if not many voices in the Gator Nation, who have been saying that there's a quarterback controversy this offseason, and I understand that the position has not been settled since Tim Tebow graduated, but Felipe Franks did nothing but improve in his first year under Dan Mullen last year. He went from a redshirt freshman season with 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, to a sophomore season with 24 touchdowns and just 6 interceptions, and yet some are still looking for somebody to take over the reins for Franks, but on Saturday, he looked terrific, threw for 327 yards, 4 touchdowns, had touchdown passes of 65, 41, 61, and 64 yards. And oh, by the way, he also caught a 40-yard touchdown pass.
Nice.
And that was all in the first two quarters. Yes, it was a spring game, but hey, everybody was still playing out there, and Franks certainly looked the part.
Very nice. Okay, last but not least, you want to give some shout-outs to local teams who won championships over the weekend.
The Jacksonville Giants basketball team won the ABA national title for the fourth straight year. It's the sixth time overall that the Giants will hang a banner. Also, the Westside Wolverines won the U19 state championship in rugby. This is a team that started at Westside High School and has expanded to include kids from other schools. Not necessarily a high school team for one school, but a team made up of high school students who have won the state championship in rugby when they beat Cardinal Gibbons. So congratulations to both the Giants and the Wolverines for their wins.
It's amazing how the sports universe, the sports ecosystem, if you will, has really expanded in this area over the years.
Yeah, and I think part of that is the growth of the city for sure, but also the social media has opened up a lot of pathways for information to understand what other sports are out there. We just did a story on Channel 4 about an esports team at Bishop Kenny. That's video games, folks. And I'm not sure that qualifies in the same realm as rugby, but it certainly has kids involved and active and competing as a team. So the number of teams doing well in our area certainly does continue to expand.
Thanks, Cole. Follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Catch him most nights on Channel 4, the local station. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Brady Corum is running the board today. And if you have feedback, we always like to hear it. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, a new report on the damage to Florida's inmates kept for long periods of time in solitary confinement. The case against solitary confinement. That's tomorrow. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for listening. And if you're catching our rebroadcast tonight at 8, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. See you Tuesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.